You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network's Quantum Leap Book Club. Our host, Parisha, is traveling and teaching and will not be joining us tonight. So tonight, I'm going to be joined by my co-host, Geraldine Dalby Ball, an environmental biologist from Sydney, Australia. And Geraldine has an absolute love of nature that she brings forward on this program every week. Rosemary Heyer from Frankfurt, Germany, and she is an English teacher and she works with children. She also is an activist and brings forward a lot of journeys and trips and things like that, really touching into a lot of people in the world. I'm also joined by Dr. Joyce Mullenhauer. She's a doctor of naturopathy, and she works a lot with people that are journeying toward the ends of their lives. And it's absolutely wonderful, the work that she does. She's from Kingman, Arizona. I have Marianne Love with me tonight. She is a clinical psychologist from Melbourne, Australia, and she always brings in a little bit of information, especially on the work and the treatments she does with people and really helping them resolve and get in and a better understanding of themselves. And I'm Trina Cooper. I'm in Denver, Colorado, and I have been a lifelong entrepreneur and an activist. I have a center in Colorado, and then I also do a lot of business teaching and things like that. So all of us bring forward a little bit of a different outlook on this program, and we want to welcome all of you and really, really appreciate the fact that you're joining us and taking in this book. We're presently studying Mind Into Matter by Dr. Fred Alan Wolf. He is a PhD and a physicist, but he also steps out of the box a little bit in the way he talks about spirit and matter. And this particular book, Mind Into Matter, that's exactly what it is. This is a journey of taking a look at the way the old alchemists looked and the way the new scientists are looking and how that pertains to our lives right now. And so last week we started this book, and we spent time on the introduction. And so we're going to begin today with about around page 9 and move through about page 17. So this is called New Alchemy. That's what we talked about last week. And what is that? That's actually the making or taking and melding these ideas of the old alchemist, moving them in with the new scientist's way of looking at things and reaching further understandings, especially for ourselves in our growth, our own personal growth, and the way we show up in the world. So this is a fascinating book. I think pretty much everybody, I know my co-hosts have all done this book probably 2, maybe 3 times. This might be the 3rd time going through. It's had a huge impact on all of us. And we're going to start out with the very beginning, back to page 9, where we actually talk about the story of you. We're ending up, it's basically, this is kind of a carryover or a review of last week a little bit, but this is kind of an experiment. This book is about us learning more about ourselves. So this is an experiment in what we're doing. And it's really the story of us. It's the way we look at things. It's the way the world impacts us and the way the inner us impacts the world. So we're going to ask that everyone who joins in tonight actually, I want to encourage everybody to talk. I want to encourage everybody to discuss things. And please identify yourself and where you're from, the location where you're from, and also how you're kind of connected, because a lot of us work with the Learning Center for Human Development. So a lot of us are connected with that. And so please, as you come on and you start sharing some things that you want to share, please be sure to share your name and where you are and your connection. So we appreciate all of you being on here tonight. So let's get rolling. And does anybody here have something that they would like to begin with tonight in sharing?
Hello, this is Geraldine in Sydney, Australia.
Hello there.
Hello. And I guess the key thing, just as you're saying, you know, these parts from page 9, is that little bit of looking again, that this is the story of you. And I just wanted to point out, we did read this last week as well, but that universe, Y-O-U, and then the verse, so this is about you. And a key word here that it actually points out that without you, there wouldn't be a universe. And I know from the perspective of, you know, from an environmental perspective, as a young child, I used to wish that humans would disappear because they were destroying nature. And it's been quite an evolution and revolution to see that actually it's our thoughts that are interacting with energy, frequency, however people want to say it, there's information out there that then is giving mass or giving presence to the beauty that we see. So it's quite a different place, and it's a place to move towards love of humans, and particularly at this time, love of self, because also, as this book says, just in the next couple of pages, that by unrolling the story of yourself and the many, many storylines you might bring with you from your ancestral DNA, there's a much greater level of compassion you can have for yourself as you learn about your own story or stories, how they come together, and how to recognize what's called the trickster at the door, so you don't get tricked into just recreating your past, but you actually can be part of whatever it is you're wanting to create.
Thank you for sharing that. That idea of the trickster, what it brought up for me is something I think that's shared in this book too, is that we really need to flip ourselves around and look for the trickster and watch for the trickster and be aware that the trickster is going to show up, because that's where we're going to, in my opinion, gain our greatest growth. What do you think about that? Anybody have any comments on what Geraldine just shared? I think this idea of the trickster, because it's hidden and because we don't want to look at it, ends up being something that can tell us a lot. I know Marianne Love probably deals with the trickster with people and the stories and the games that they play all the time in the work that you do.
I do, yeah. It's you know, it's in all of us, and I think we buy into an illusion of something. And I think he refers to that here at the start of this whole section on this book and the story of you, where he says, the mind enters into the body at a cellular, molecular, and nuclear, neural molecular levels and becomes ensnared, almost, though not quite, believing it is the body. The reality that mind dimly senses itself as beyond the body will offer a new insight into how the mind and body works as elements in an alchemical laboratory. And I think, you know, for all of us, we can easily get confused about who we are, given how we're raised and that initial programming in life. When you're up until the age of 7 to 9, we're really in a brain pattern of theta, and that's almost like a hypnotic state. And so we're just absorbing everything around us, from what our parents have said to other key figures in our life, and that becomes the program. And then, you know, we believe it to be true because we were told it. And it's probably a survival mechanism, really, and to give us our individual experience. But actually, you know, this book is pointing to the fact that we are much bigger and much broader than all of that. And the work is actually to unsnare ourselves from how we have bought into this illusion. And he's opened up, he points to really big concepts that are deeply profound, and almost have to take it to meditation to really embody and understand on a personal level what he's talking about, not just on a knowledge or a scientific level. Like, I think to integrate it is to live it and breathe it, and takes it to a whole nother level.
I think that's true. And the whole quest that we're actually on is finding that inside of us, taking it. We have to take it personally. That's the way we learned everything. That's the way we brought everything forward from the time we were a baby, was pulling it, pulling in experiences, and then forming those in our lives and creating our own illusions around the whole thing. So the only way that we're ever going to get beyond that and really get to this place of understanding of who we are and how we're connected to everything is to go back in and take a look at who we are. And I think it's courageous. It's really courageous to step into that place. And sometimes it's really fumbly, and sometimes it's scary. And we need to understand that it's a journey that we're on of reconnecting or remembering ourselves again, all the pieces of ourselves. So does anyone else have anything that they want to say or comment on around what we just covered?
Yeah, this is Rosemary. Can you hear me?
I can.
Good, perfect. Yeah, I like to talk about that also, his trick, or what he calls God's trick. And that is basically the beginning of the chapter one. And I think it's interesting that he starts with that, because that's the basic, isn't it? That God is actually, how he says, hiding from itself. And it reminds me of that story we probably all heard, that when the angels created the world, they're thinking, where could they hide God? Where could they hide spirit? And where can we find it? And it's basically hiding in ourselves. So it goes back to what Marianne says, that we really need to work on ourselves. And we're talking about that he's using science, quantum physics, actually, basically, and he's using the alchemists, the understanding of the alchemists who are working on understanding the universe from a different level. And what it really is for me is mysticism. He's diving into the mysticism of the Jewish culture, of the Jewish religion, using the Kabbalah also, and saying that we cannot understand everything just by science. And we must go into the understanding of the alchemists, of the mysticism. And what I like about it is that he's having the courage as a science to move into this more unlogical understanding of the world, an intuitive understanding of the world. And it's actually the word mysticism is a Greek word which comes from concealing. So it means actually to uncover something, to uncover the trick of God who's hiding in us. And we all are lost in the illusion of the world. He's actually saying there's no separation. We all know that. And he goes into that deeper, actually saying that we have an understanding of that deep in us, that there is no separation. But we have agreed to believe God's trick. I mean, we have agreed to say that there are distinctions. I agree to say that there is a tree. I agree to say that there is another country. I agree to say that there's another race. I agree to say that there's another human being. And we are not seeing the oneness of everything, the connectiveness. And just recently, when we talked about Nassim Khomeini, that physicist who speaks about, from a scientific standpoint, also about consciousness, and he actually said they have discovered that the universe is connected, and we are not only part of it, we are actually part of its mechanism. And just what he said when he spoke about that the universe cannot exist without us. And I think there are even songs about that, like God is needing me. God is needing me, actually, to exist. So just as Marianne says, just that could be like 3 hours meditation, just that sentence, that we are needed by God to exist. I see that as a little bit for myself as a spike in a wheel, in a bicycle, you know, like the wheel would not turn if there would be the spikes missing inside. And I think that is really fascinating just to talk about that and think about that thought.
As you were talking, what came to me was, I don't know if you guys have done this, but it's sort of like the scratch tickets, or when we were little, we would color and then we'd cover it over with black, or you would get something with black and then you'd start scraping away and you could actually see the picture, or you can see the reward, or you could see the thing. It always exists, like on a scratch ticket, the prize exists underneath the little label that's there, but we don't really see it. We don't really know what it is until we start scraping away that top layer. And that top layer is really something that, you know, we've created ourselves, like you said, and God or our true being is the one that's hidden under it. And so that's part of our job, is like, scrape away that layer. Let's get to it. Let's know that it's there. And that's one thing I think he brings out in this book in the very beginning. It's there. This is who you are. You've covered it up. Now let's get back to business and see how it all works. So anyone else have anything they want to add? I see Mary. Can you introduce yourself and where you are?
Yes, I'm in Kingman and my name is Mary Smith. And going from what you just said, I keep thinking about how in this intro and in the first chapter, he references impossible to imagine three times. And he does. And so on page 9, when he's just beginning to introduce the Hebrew letters and how he understands taking the seed of understanding and the mysticism, he describes Aleph as the impossible life-death principle, the void out of which everything emanates. And remember, we just read on page 5, where he says creation began, so Aleph is the beginning, creation began when God withdrew himself into himself in an impossible-to-imagine self-referential loop. So the fact that, and then he goes to, of course, on when he says in that first description of Aleph, he says Aleph is beyond definition. So, you know, the beyond in the impossible to imagine. So I've read this many times. And I had heard once someone say, if we really got the introduction, we would really get what he was saying. And I'm really seeing here, because he takes us through a whole loop in the understanding of the Hebrew alphabet, and the loop is the self-referential loop that he refers to. And who is it that is the referral point? It's us. So he begins with the understanding of creation, and we, the only way that there's any way to understand anything about God or anything about creation is that we're here as the feedback loop, which has like a lot of understanding and to come to, but his bottom line is, without us, there isn't. We're it.
So I know Nassim Haramein has talked about this from the science point of view, this universal feedback loop. Do you want to say anything about that? Because it's on the science side too.
Well, he does it best. Again, he takes, it is taking science, going through all these different phases, just like Fred Allen Wolf does in the book, begins at the end, goes around a whole circle, and comes back to the beginning point, is what science is doing. So, just like everything oscillates, so talking about Nassim, where everything oscillates, oscillating is a movement, it's a circular movement. So everything has a referential point that refers back to itself, is one way to look at it. And there's a whole bunch more that we can get into to Nassim, but it's that understanding of if you start with a point and you're getting to a point, that is really a loop. No matter where you touch down on it, it's a loop.
There you go. Okay. I couldn't unmute. That's it's like, okay, be quiet. It's telling me to. Anyway, that was pretty, that's a good way to describe it. And again, what pops in my head is that song, Circle of Life. It's a circle of life from The Lion King. And everything runs in that circle. It's that loop that goes back around all the time. It just is continually going back around. Anyone else have any comments right now? Any fun thing? Okay, I see that NQ that's down there.
Hi. So two points. I was thinking about this on the way to work a couple days ago. When he's talking about no distinctions, like you can't say where the water ends and the beach begins and so on. I mean, even if you were on the beach, you know, you can sort of look at the edge and you see the sand that is wetter and is firmer when you're walking on it. And, you know, as you dig down, there's water in between all those sand particles and there's less water up a little higher and so on. So that no distinction, it makes me think that, you know, when we realize that all of our particles are like, what was it, less than 1%, less than 1% physical, and all of the rest is empty space, that we are sort of like a cloud of birds in the shape of a human being. Or if you think of those Christmas decorations that are maybe shaped like a deer, and it's made out of netting, and it has some lights there, and because some of it's illuminated, it looks like a deer. But even more so, the image of a cloud of birds, that you can see this curved shape as they fly all together, this giant flock. And you say, well, like if you said that's a human being, there's the part that's more solid, birdy, and the part that's more air. And we're like that we've got all of the universe swimming through us because we've got all this space in us. And also it made me think of how Nassim in his unification has said that at the, I think it's the proton, each proton is connected to half of all of the other protons in the universe. And then how many protons do you have in your body? So there's another proton that's got to be connected to the other half of all of the protons in the universe. So that's where I was thinking and understanding that you can't take sides, because to judge is to say that half of you is wrong. That's, you know, it's the duality. Which part of am I going to express? But you have to say, which part am I going to light up? Which part am I going to express? I can't judge the other part of it wrong, because you need both of them for all of it to exist. So that's some of what interconnected between Nassim and Fred, and thinking about that on the drive-in in the morning.
It really is what my friend calls a mind pretzel. It's sort of like you get in it and it sort of twists you around, and it's like you really do have to sit with it for a little bit to get your, you know, to kind of wrap yourself around it, because it's so, and yet it's so simple. You know, it's so simple. It's like everything is part of everything else. And it's only as you said, distinction. It's our perspective. It's our ideas. It's our way of looking at things that's making everything separate. And it's what we learned as we came in as babies, and we grew up and we were taught there were distinctions. And now we get to unwind that. And now we get to see really the mystery and the fun, as Rosemary said, that mystery, the mysticism. It's like, let's dive into that, because it's fun. It's really fun to start uncovering these kinds of things. Let's not make this like so serious and so like so learned that it's just boring. Let's make it an adventure and fun and a journey to go on to really discover who we are. Now, I know the next piece in this, we talk about the chapter headings, and the chapter headings are all basically based in the Hebrew alphabet. And so I believe Gabrielle had said that she wanted to share a little bit about the Hebrew alphabet and a little bit about this in the intro in this book.
Yes, thank you, Trina. I'm Gabrielle, and I'm from Mount Beauty in Australia, a town in the mountains, and I'm a psychologist here. So I became really excited about the Hebrew alphabet because I really like calligraphy and handwriting, and just seeing the symbols really excited me. So I looked into the history a little bit. Says earlier, it used to be a symbolic doorway to as a means to become alive, you know, and find your human realization. And as early as 1250 BC, these signs and symbols were found, and they were common language at the time. So what happened then at around 200 BC, the Romans dispersed all the peoples who used the Hebrew language. So the Hebrew language actually was pretty much extinguished, which is quite fascinating. And it was still used as a religious, sacred language of Judaism, but the people did not communicate in it anymore. So for over 1,000 years, this language did not exist, until a gentleman from Russian descent with last name Yehuda came and he revived the language, and which ultimately ended up in 1942, when Israel became a state. It became the official language verbally and written of Judaism, which is really exciting. Now, with my calligraphy passion, I had to look a little bit further into it, and the alphabet is a bit like ours. It has 22 characters, 5 of them are vowels. But also they have what's called a nukud, which is a series of dots and little lines that are placed either underneath, in the middle, or on top of a letter to indicate a vowel. So vowels are often not written out. I found that very exciting. The language is written from right to left, which has been a challenge even drawing the letters, because I'm so used to the other way around. So what I found is, and I thought hopefully we can see this, coming from the symbolism of the letters initially, I'm not sure whether you can see this at all. Up the top here is Aleph, the first letter A. This is how it was written in the ancient past. This is how they write it now. In the past, it looked like an ox's head. So looking at an ox, they indicated strength and leadership that an ox would have. Then this is the letter, well, I have to have a look now, Lamed, which is a staff that someone holds. In the ancient drawings and newer ones. Now, both letters put together make the word El, which is God. So the staff represents authority, protection, while Aleph, the ox's head, shows strength and leadership. So out of these two, they make God. Like it has moved a little bit from just interpreting just the pictures to words. So it's been very fascinating. And just sort of to finish off, to show you that there's a two letters. I managed to write the word fish, so I'm pretty excited about that. And that little letter, kind of like a T looking thing down here, is the word fish is dug. So that's an A. So the A is actually not written as a letter, but underneath indicated. So a bit of a tangent, but I got very excited about this part. So,
and I do know that he's using these letters, the first 9 or so letters, as chapter headings. And there's a purpose in that. And is there anybody on here that would like to talk a little bit about the purpose that he that he's brought about using those letters. So
this is Geraldine in Sydney, Australia. Okay. I'll let someone else talk about the purpose, but just a real quick comment that the other thing that keeps coming through this is that, which is really great what Gabrielle shared as well, is that each shape has a sound. And as we keep getting more into the science as well as the mysticism, it's actually the sound that's a vibration. The vibration has effect. And indeed, that's basically the very last words of this first chapter as well, when he says, the most powerful tool ever created, the word. And if we keep that in mind, that we're not just looking at a symbol, we're looking at something that has a sound, and that sound then has a frequency. And that frequency then has effect on the void, or we could say it has effect on energy, you know, as we were just hearing from Nikki about the flock of birds. You know, that flock of birds could be any shape, and the frequency of the sound is that influences each of those little pieces to take a form. So, yeah, more than happy to love to hear more about each individual one, and just a reminder too that we're talking about a sound or a frequency with each one.
What's amazing about these numbers, and I think this is one of the reasons he chose to follow this, is that there is a meaning, a mysticism behind them, and they build upon each other. And when you start to understand the way these are built on each other, similar to numerology, there is a vibration, like you said, Geraldine, and each one of these, as we move through this book, builds upon each other. And so it's a journey. It's a journey that we're going to take through this book, learning about the one, the two, the three, as we move through each one of these letters. So I know chapter one is Aleph, which Gabrielle shared. Do we have anybody else that has something they want to add to this discussion about these letters, about the introduction, something else that you've pulled out of the introduction? I see Robbie waving her hand. You want to unmute?
There you yes, go. I unmuted myself. I wanted to talk about how much he references the concept of unity in this part of the book. And I wanted to also point out that he wrote almost 20 years ago. It was published in 2001. But what he's talking about right in this section of this book is really timely, considering what's been going on in the world in the last few months, you know, because of the COVID-19 virus. Our various and officials have told us all to stay separate, to stay in our own homes, to close down our businesses, to stay at least 6 feet apart. So there's this whole theme on for centuries. I call it the divide and conquer theme, where we're kept separate. Our government and the church keeps us all separate because it's much easier to control us, supposedly, separate. However, despite what's been going on with this whole COVID-19 separation thing, there's a whole movement across the planet for people to reunite and to engage with each other and to join together as a community, regardless of, you know, what officially we're being told to do. We're moving to come to unified species and unified force. So I think it's really cool, and it's really timely that Fred Allen Wolf is bringing this up at this time. You know, because think about it, there was a time in human existence where we thought the world, we totally believed that the world was flat. And what we had some evidence showing that the world was round or shaped like a sphere. Our whole worldview changed. Our whole perspective of reality shifted, took a big shift. Same thing happened when we learned that the Earth was not the center of the solar system, that it was a planet revolving around the sun like the other planets do. We went through this whole shift in perspective, and I really think that's what's happening now, that we're going through this whole shift in perspective. And up to, you know, our worldview was that everything was disconnected, everything was separate, the universe behaved like a machine, nothing alive, it could be broken down and studied and analyzed by its, you know, smaller and smaller particles, but each one of those particles and separate and not in any way connected to each other. And ultimately, you know, nothing was going on. A lot of dead, random, chaotic particles floating around in a space that was devoid of anything. But now we're starting to go through this shift, or we have been going through it, and now it's just really, you know, coming on strong that everything is connected, and we're developing this connected worldview that Fred Allen Wolf calls unity, calls unified field, or the world. So it means that, you know, we live in a whole universe where everything is connected, and in that so-called empty space is a vast energy potential. It connects everything together. So everything is evolving, and there's this beautiful balance that happens between all of these particles, and there's an intelligence behind everything. So this part of the book to me is setting up what's coming for the rest of the book. And I heard what Mary said, if we can get just this part, that part of the book in the introduction, then we basically got everything. And I think that's where we are as a species in our evolution right now, is even though he wrote this book 20 years ago, we're really emerging into that right now.
Thank you for that, because I think it's right. I mean, everything has divine timing. Everything is like connected to each other. So when it's the right time, it comes forward. Have you ever noticed, and I noticed this a lot right now, just sitting outside, and it's like, even though man is being told a certain thing and is behaving a certain way, nature's just moving along. Nature isn't getting held up. Nature isn't stopping. Nature isn't forming any judgments. Nature's just moving along. And if we really think of ourselves as nature and that we have that part of us, that's that longing of being connected again. That's that longing of the need to be with each other, of reestablishing their relationships. So that's a great point you bring out, that unity piece of it is deep inside of us. It really, really is. And I appreciate you sharing that today. Anybody else have a comment on what Robbie said or some of the discussion we've had so far? I see Joyce. I can't hear Joyce, but I can see Joyce.
I bet you can hear me now.
Yes, I can. Great.
So I love this big, huge word that Wolf uses to describe unity, that it's the inseparability. Well, we talk about things being separate, but we don't ever, I have never in my vocabulary tried to use the word inseparability. So he's telling us in this large word that unity means that everything's connected, just as we have been talking about here. And my mind had to work a little bit with the opposites that he gave in as examples, that heaven is opposite to earth, but connected. Mind is not body, but it's connected. Free will and determinism are connected. Life and death are connected. So NQ's example of the ocean and the beach is not too hard to visualize, but I think it takes our minds, or at least my mind, a little bit more time to contemplate just exactly the connection, because I can trust that unity exists in all of that, and that it has been a total misconception, as he says, not even a fact, that the duality of things they may appear to be opposites, they may appear to be distinct from each other, but they are connect as part of unity. So I think that's something for us all to consider and contemplate on.
Thank you so much for that. Anyone, you know, I'm noticing that, again, that same theme of opening up to this, about getting what's in this introduction as being the root of what this book is going to help us move through. And so we've got a little bit more time here tonight, and we also have a little bit of the first chapter to jump into, which is starts out with Aleph. So does anyone have anything that they would like to share about Aleph? I think reading that first page, reading what it is and what it's about is key in understanding what's going on. So Elizabeth, would you mind reading that one page? I think it's like page 11 or somewhere in that neighborhood, 12.
Okay, I'll read it. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Yes, well, I'm Elizabeth Dusty Ritchie, and I live in Pennsylvania, here on the East Coast, and I'm a writer, and I've been a student of various spiritual traditions much of my adult life, and this is simply a continuation. It's funny, because I was really thinking about how this page should be read. But you hit the nail on the head. Okay, so this is Aleph. It's separated off at the beginning of the book, or of the chapter. And it says, Aleph represents the supreme energy, subtle, alive, but not existing as itself in the space-time world we know, because it is imaginal. So it's not existing as itself in the world we know. It's something else. We cannot recognize it, or it's hard to kind of get hold of it because it's kind of hiding, like the trickster, like somebody said earlier. It is the primal energy in all. And all that we know is in Aleph. Aleph is beyond definition, incapable of being defined or limited. It moves at infinite speed and thus evades time. It is primal consciousness, unknown to itself. Its action in the temporal is explosive and discontinuous. Wow, I said a lot. It's unknown to itself, the primal consciousness unknown to itself. I think that's the whole story of our lives as a representative or as a manifestation of primal consciousness. We're trying to figure out who we are. And I actually was going to, eventually, when I read these pages, I became interested in the page 18, talking about how we feel separation and it's all illusionary, and we need to shatter the membrane of separability. And I thought about that, and I meditated a little bit about it. And as Robbie said, it's like the perfect time right now. It's an amazing time that we're all facing in our own humanity. Is, are we separate? Are we so different from others that we want to kill them, or we want to have a war with them, or we think that they don't have any right to be or to have the opinions that they have? And it's a very, very traumatic time for humanity. It's like a birth of a new time, but we're still in the birth pangs. And I look back, and the words that came to me from my studies in spirituality were the words existential malaise. the sickness of existence, the essential sickness of our existence, is that we feel separate. And it's this isolation that we feel that we're all traumatized by, some more, some less. And we feel deprived of what somebody else has, and we want it, and and the things that satisfy us are the things that such as harmony and music, when we get together and we dance together and we sing together, and those are things that reunite us in a harmony, in a higher way. It's not this primal energy, but it's a more harmonic energy. So I had all those thoughts when I was thinking about this Aleph and the beginning of humanity's creation and our essential nature and what we can become with this evolution of Aleph.
I can feel that. You took me to a place of you know, when we get a really good hug from somebody, something that we're missing big time right now, but that you just feel such a connectedness at that point in time, and you, and every cell in your body like comes alive. And then, like you said, we got the disconnect. It's that malaise that it is like an illness. It's like we feel sick. We feel sad. We feel separate. It's a great explanation of it. Anyone else have something that they want to share? I see Maria. Can you introduce yourself too?
Hi, I'm Maria from Miami.
Hi.
I'm on the other tip of the state. Well, I just kind of want to add to that. And what struck me was, and it's kind of like what Elizabeth is going on, it's on page 16, and I did a lot of thinking and journaling on that today, and I just want to read it because it just hit me like, you know, something in the gut, as they say, you know, when you get hit with something in the gut. And it says, at some point in our lives, somehow, somewhere, just for an instant, the unveiling of the great mystery comes to pass. God, the magician, raises the curtain, reveals the trick just slightly, and we glimpse the illusion. But we don't shout, wow. No gasps of wonderment fill the theater. Something becomes distinguishable from nothing in a single creative act. But we trick ourselves into not seeing, and so it goes. No applause fills the air. We sit back, watch the show, breathe a sigh of relief, and say unconsciously, well, never figured this one out. Might as well just accept it. And I've had a lot of work to do with this. This really hit me very strong, and I journaled on it today, and I even drew in my journal book. And it's, you know, as I was journaling, I realized this is all some kind of cosmic joke. Okay. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm all of this. And in my journaling, I found myself grappling with something, the great universe out there going, hello, why do we have to do this so difficult? You know, it's like everything that we've always heard from our elder and teacher grandmother. And I'm sitting here beginning, and I started in my journal realizing, well, I only see the separateness because I choose to see it. And I'm starting to really catch myself in that the illusion is there because I choose to see the illusion, only because I choose it, not because it's really there. Because, I mean, everything that we're learning, even with Nassim and all of this, it's like it's all an illusion. And for me to grasp that concept, if any of you know me, is like, okay, that's like what? Anyhow, so that has been a real... It's that, you know, it's kind of like the observer, because we are the observers, therefore it is. And it's all kind of coming full circle with, I hear grandmother's words. It's the universe exists because I say it exists. That's a real powerful statement. And there's a part of this is because it's, yes, we've all kind of touched on it, is how we were raised, how we were indoctrinated, and through all the many different avenues that we came into this, into mind, into matter. And I kept saying, why even mind into matter? You know, it's like, why can't we go to the basics? We're all light and love. Anyhow, that's kind of what impacted me as I started to read this. And those were my kind of thoughts as I was journaling and working with it.
I appreciate that, because that clause hit me too. And I kept thinking about the times when I've had these big aha moments, or I've had something really magical happen or mystical happen. And then my mind jumps in and starts saying, that was a cool, but I don't get it. And took it away. And somebody said to me a long time ago, make sure you journal those things, write them down. Because then when you start doubting again, when you start jumping back into the illusion, you don't think it happened, whatever, you go back and you can read your story of this crazy, amazing, magical experience that you couldn't understand. And it just keeps reminding you that that's what's there. We don't slide back into the illusion quite as often. So is it, I appreciate you bringing that forward, because that piece is really key, I think, with a lot that comes out through this book, is that we have to grasp those moments and we have to repattern that again over and over again, so that we really do shift from that place of being an illusion to really being what the truth is, being what the creator is. So wondering if anyone else has any comments on that, or something to share along those lines too.
This is Rosemarie. Hello from Germany. Hi, it's me again. Well, I appreciate your comment, Maria, because what I got out of your comment is that let's just have fun, you know? It's like, this is just a beautiful game we're playing. So we have to be careful by understanding the concept of illusion, not to throw out the child with the bathtub, you know? Like, because, I mean, God intended that, you know? It was intended. We created that wonderful flower and that wonderful tree and the laughter and the children and the mountains and the valleys and the ocean. So, wow, this is also fun just to be here. It's one of the best places in the whole universe. And it's maybe even greater fun, just as Maria said, that we know it's an illusion, you know? So it's kind of easier to take it, and also to take the valleys and to take the mountains of life. So it frees up to say it's an illusion, because you can play with it now, you know, nothing happens really, because it still stays all the same. It's all one. That's what I just want to say.
We're coming up to the end of our time shortly. Do we have any last minute comments that people would love to kind of chime in with? I don't see people jumping up and down. Exciting.
It's Geraldine, and I do have just one. It goes in with all of that, and it's, if we can stop believing it for 1 minute, 1 second, even 1 millisecond, and allow our consciousness to become aware that we have stopped, we will see the trick revealed. And I think this is really important, because there's times when it's like, oh, I haven't been conscious all day, or I was brushing my teeth and walking away again. But there's that thing that just says even a millisecond. So to be lovely to yourself, and if you've got a millisecond where you were able to see the inseparability, where you're able to see that you're connected to all, that's fantastic. That's a start. So be lovely to yourself and enjoy the milliseconds.
Appreciate that. I saw Dina pop on. Dina, did you have something that you wanted to share?
Hi, I'm Dina, and I live in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi.
And Geraldine actually grasped a bit of what I was going to say, where Fred says, you know, if we could stop believing it for 1 minute, 1 second, even 1 millisecond, and allow our consciousness to become aware that we have stopped, and we'll see the trick revealed. And what that said to me was those milliseconds could possibly come from our meditations. And when we're in the void, or, you know, just in a state of not thinking, really, not thinking, just going out there and just allowing ourselves to be part of the all that is. And that perhaps in those even brief moments, we could then understand that there are no distinctions, and that that trick of distinctions would be revealed. It's really all I wanted to share.
Thank you so much for that. And we are coming up to the end today. Let's see, we're working with Fred Allen Wolf's book, Mind into Matter. And we're starting to jump into chapter one. So I just wanted to read the title. It's going to be The Void, The Impossible Life-Death Principle. And there's a quote there that says, "For behold, the kingdom of heaven is within you." We're told it's in us. We're told we need to look for it. And he says, the main idea of the new alchemy, the cord that binds together all of the ideas presented here, lies in the concept of unity, the great inseparability of all things. And I know several of you shared that. That's something to ponder on, to meditate on, the connectedness, the energy of it all, and that life-death circle, the cycle that we move through. So appreciating everybody that joined in and gave their comments today. This was fabulous. It's time that we conclude our studies for this week. And we thank you for sharing your time and your energy with us. You matter and you count. And everything that you do always makes a difference. So we look forward to you being with us next week on our next program as we start diving even further into chapter one. And that we make a leap to greater consciousness. That's what this is all about, is expanding ourselves even into that greatness of who we are. So have a powerful week and allow your light to shine everywhere. And all good things to you. Appreciate you being here. And we'll see you back next week on Law of Attraction Radio Network's Quantum Leap Book Club. Have a great, great week, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.